my mic on? How about now? All right. Roy said the mic's on, so if it's not, blame Roy. Johnny did say that in the bulletin this morning are the assignments. Technically, you did volunteer for these, like just a long time ago. But if you can't, kind of feel that, there's a cleanup crew, a setup crew, even people's putting out salt and pepper shakers. There's kind of a job for everybody. So if you can't do that, or if you can actually help in an area, we hope you will. There's actually one more. I think there's one I didn't put in there about bringing ice. I don't think that's in there, but I've got to put that somewhere. But in any case, if you would like to volunteer and help in some areas, just let me know after church, and we'll slide your name right in. Next week is Super Sunday, and Johnny said we had a combined service. Maybe that's what I thought I heard. We don't have a combined service. We have combined class. So those who speak Spanish actually still meet over there, and those of us who speak English actually meet right here. And while we have donuts, we actually have people who convert that room where we put all the food in, and then we have a combined class in here like we do every year. So just want to remind everybody, if you've got somebody you can bring or invite to church, I hope you will. And if you can bring, you know, food and dessert and then a side or something, that would be great too. So hope everybody can come. It's great every year. Remember, we have church, we have Bible class, we eat, we go home, we do not come back. You can come back. I'm not coming back. So if you come back and we're not here, I warned you. A couple of you came back last year. I think a couple of you came back the year before that. So it's just letting you know. So if you come back, you'll have a service in the parking lot by yourself. Anyway, that's next Sunday. When when Don read these first few verses, the story of Naaman, even Don knew. You know, he said this is a story we all know, we're all familiar with, and we hear these stories. And I don't know if you're like me. I've heard this story a billion times. It gets, you know, no matter what the denomination you grew up in, or no matter how you grew up or how long you've been in the church, most of the time people know a story like this for multiple of reasons. Whenever I heard this story, you know, about the guy who goes down to the Jordan River and he's supposed to dip himself seven times and that's how the leprosy's cured, this was always one of those baptism sermons. Every time you had to go to the Old Testament to get a baptism sermon, you went here because he dipped himself and you had to get a sermon about doing what God wanted you to do God's way, exactly God's way, you went here. You know, he told Naaman to dip himself seven times, and he didn't do it six, he didn't do it eight, he didn't do it five, he did it seven. So these are the kinds of sermons I always hear. I ran into an old friend last week. Hadn't seen him in a minute, but I saw him, and right when I saw him, it was like, you know, we'd never been apart. We kind of picked up right where we left off. I was asking him about his wife. He was asking me about, I don't remember, but we were talking back and forth, and it was, you know, you see an old friend, and you hug, and you laugh, and you just kind of fall right back into that routine. Coming on stories like this, it's kind of like meeting an old friend again. You know, you see him, and you know the story, and you know how it goes, and you know how it ends, and you know all those details. While talking to my friend, he told me something. He just kind of let it slip. I don't know if he let it slip. He let it slip. And it was something I never knew about him. And this has been going on with him for years. But I never knew. And he said, sure you knew. I said, no, I love when people tell me what I know. Don't y'all? Don't you just love that? You know that person. You know that. No, I don't. I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. Now, maybe you told me and I forgot. But I still don't know it. And he said, I know I've told you that. And I said, man, I don't care if you've told me. I don't remember. That's news to me. And so we talked about this detail of his life that I still say he's never told me about, that I never knew about. And it got me thinking about the story of Naaman. I think we know this story so well, that old friend. We see it, we know it. It's the Jordan story. It's seven times. He has leprosy. We know how it ends, and it's Elisha, and we get all that. And sometimes we read these stories, but there are details, I think, in stories because we know them so well, we don't see them. You know, we're so familiar with this, it stared us right in the face, and we don't know. You know how many times I have met with a married couple, and I'll just look to one of them and I'll say, what's their favorite food? How many of you can tell me what your spouse's favorite food is? Not the favorite, but how about one of their favorites? You know, can I give you some slack? One of their favorites. Some of you aren't raising your hands. You don't want to participate. That's okay. That's all right. I'm going to put your face on the video behind me if you don't start raising your hands. You don't know. But I was talking with him, and I said, what's her favorite food? He said, I don't know. I said, you don't know what she eats? He said, I know what she cooks. And I said, you don't know what she likes? He says, no. I said, what's her favorite color? He said, I don't know. I said, what does she like to watch? He said, I don't know. Some of y'all looking at your spouse like, that's you. No, don't do that. Don't do that. But is that you? Do you not know these things? So I just started asking any questions. I said, what's her mom's name? You know, what's her dad's name? He knew the first names. And I said, what's her maiden name? You know, surely, you know, when y'all dated. But it was almost as if he had gotten so comfortable in life that the little things he really didn't notice. And so she would start talking about when they would go out to eat, and she got mad at him because he took her out for Valentine's Day, and they went out to this big place, and they're eating pasta. Well, they're supposed to eat pasta, but she has a condition where she can't eat pasta. So why'd you take her there? And he got mad because she wasn't grateful that he took her out. Well, he can't win, can he? Because he's not paying attention to the little things. It's the little things that we have to see. This story of Naaman, I would argue that all of us know the big things. But it's the little things that we miss because we know the story so well. How about we start here? What if we start the story and understand that this, why is this always off? Every time. This story is actually not about the good guys. It's about the bad guys. We don't ever see that part. We always just see the story. It's about Naaman. I know I got a big map up here, but now it's back all of a sudden. If you imagine that you tell a story and I tell you that the whole movie is about Darth Vader. We all know who Darth Vader is, I'm assuming. Yeah. This is about Israel's enemies. It's not about Israel. All these stories in Kings, if you go back and look in Kings, it's all about the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. And then 2 Kings 5 that Don started reading from, all of a sudden, it ain't about those kings. It's about the bad guys. It's about the evil guys. You know, Syria and Assyria, those two are fighting, and they want Israel to help them out. They want Israel in on their side. And this guy, Naaman, he's actually this general for Syria. And as Don read, when they've won all their wars, they actually go in and take slaves. Now, you got your Bibles and you go to 2 Kings chapter 5, you notice some details about the guy's life. Notice what Don read when he said he was a valiant soldier. Pretty much this is the equivalent of a 4-star general. Don said he was, I say Don like Don wrote it, but he didn't, but he just read it. Said he was a great man. Said Naaman was highly regarded. Naaman was a valiant soldier. But did y'all notice the word he said after that? But, there it is. And I've told you a million times, always wait for the but. So, whatever anybody says, the but usually tells you the opposite. He was a great man. He was highly regarded. He's a valiant soldier, but what? He had leprosy. So he had all these things going for him, but he had this issue that's going to really keep him from being involved too much. So it's about the enemy, and the enemy has an issue, and the story's about him. But what if I told you that the story's really not about him? You see in this picture, I don't know where this picture's from, but you got this picture of Naaman and the general, and he's taken over all these lands. What if I told you that this morning's story is not about Naaman? It was never about Naaman. It was about the little girl in the background. You see her? Naaman is the one who took over this country. Naaman is the one who's done all the work. Naaman is the one who's in charge. Naaman is the enemy. But it's the little servant girl. When she knows what's going on with her master, she says, back in my country, there's a medicine man, and he can cure that. So I want to ask y'all this morning, what else was in that conversation? Oh, I want you to imagine that President Trump's in the Situation Room. I just want you to imagine, okay? And I want you to imagine that his 3- or 4-star general comes into the Situation Room and he tells him, remember, it's President Trump, okay? So whatever opinion you got of him, fine. But he's in the Situation Room. His general comes in, says, sir, I got an issue. I know that we have lots of plans, but I've got a skin condition that eventually is going to kill me. Now, I have heard a rumor that in Myanmar, there is a medicine man that if I go see him, that he will cure me of this skin cancer. And I'm wanting to know if I can take a couple of planes and go and actually meet with the Secretary of State and Treasury, and if you wouldn't mind cutting me a check and actually getting this done. Does anybody else think this sounds wacko? Sounds wacko to me. So here's my question. What would that little girl have had to have told Naaman to get him to do that? If he takes all the military with him, it looks like they're being mean. It looks like they're overpowering him. If he doesn't take any military, well, then it's just risky. So he's got to go back to this country, which, by the way, we laid siege to, which, by the way, we pretty much nuked. But we hear that there's a medicine man there. And who told him about the medicine man? Did he have good intelligence? Was this one of those things, you know, there's weapons of mass destruction? You know, was it an issue of good intelligence? Was it a CIA issue? No. Who told Naaman about the medicine man? His maid or the maid's daughter. So that's our intelligence. I'm going to go and listen. I got to go find him because my maid's daughter told me about it. I got back issues. I've always had back issues. I've had back issues since I was 10. My back just decides to go out. And when it went out when I was 7, and I say went, if you've never had back issues, you really can't understand people who have back. You know, when you see people walk around like they have to go to the restroom, that's usually their back, you know. And people can't, I've had people stare at me and look at me like this, you know, because you're walking like this real slow. Or if you've seen somebody get up, you know, they get up or they sit down real easy. You know, it's their back. But at 17, I was told to go see this woman. I said, go see her. And some of y'all have been to chiropractors. You know, they're going to, you know what they're going to do, right? They're going to pop you. They're going to lean on you. They're going to, you know, do a wrestling move on you to get you to, you know, get all that stuff out. And so I said, all right, I'm going to go ahead and get that done. They said, well, but when she works on you, it's not going to be what you think. What do I got to lose? So I go to this woman. I still go to this woman. And I go to this woman, and she's got an accent. And I thought she was from another country. I think it was just New Jersey. I was 17. I was from the South. You know, I didn't know they pronounce R's like that. I thought she was from Myanmar. So she told me to lay down, and I kid you not, she it was like she took her fingers and just touched my back. And then touched my feet, and then touched my back, and just kind of, she moved her hands like this. There was no pressure. And that went on for about 30 minutes. And I was thinking to myself, I just wasted my parents' money. And she got done, she said, beautiful, all right, when can you come back? And I thought, what a whack job. This woman's voodoo. No, it's not working. I got home, and 20 minutes later, I couldn't move. I'm stuck. I don't know what she did, but she did something. So now I'm intrigued. I want to go back. And so I went back, and she did the same thing. And over the course of 2 weeks, all of a sudden, I can walk, I can move, I can jump. She didn't pop me. She didn't move anything. She's just realigning my back. That's all she's doing. I thought she was wacko. And now when I tell people to go see her, I said, hey, man, I'm going to warn you. It's going to feel like voodoo the first couple times. Stay with it. Stay with it. And I got to tell them, she'll change your life. She'll change your life. You know, she will. Just go to her. Just trust her. She'll change your life. Don't just, and she's from Jersey. So the accent, you know, whatever. But just stay with her. What would this girl have to tell Naaman to get him to go do this? I don't know. But here's the cool part of this story. I think by the time the story's over, we know exactly what the girl told him that made him go do it. Naaman goes to the president. He says, I want to go see this medicine man. And the president says, I'm with you. So here's what the president sends him with. He's got a letter of recommendation. He takes about $3.5 million in gold, takes about $500,000 in silver, and just for good measure, we take about 10 suits. Because everybody needs a suit, right? I mean, you know. So that's what Naaman brings down here. What is Naaman thinking? He's gonna buy his healings. Anybody else ever thought they could do that? Has a doctor ever told you that you don't qualify for that study? What was your next question? What'd you say, Dennis? Yeah, how much? Some of y'all looking like y'all don't ask that question. Okay. Just me and Dennis. You know, you don't qualify. Well, how much would it cost? Oh, no, that's the problem. You make too much money. Or you're on this, or you're too old, or you have this condition, and you have this illness. Hey, look, everything has a price. I told that to my kids' teachers. You know, they didn't get the part in the play. How much is it? You know, I mean, everything, it doesn't mean I can pay it, but I still going to ask, how much is it? How much would it cost? You know, everybody has a price. Oh, no, Mr. Toon. It doesn't work like that here. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Public school, private institutions. Look, how much does it cost? What was that scandal we just had a few months ago with all them kids in Harvard and Yale? Come on now. Come on now. We're not stupid. Stuff happens. Some kids work on the SATs. Some people just got money. Look, I know what it costs. Naaman knows he's got a skin condition that he's not going to qualify for, and he's going back into the country that he pretty much raised and took this slave girl. So we'll take some money for good measure. So he goes there, and he shows up, and he goes to the embassy, and the king is upset. He says, what am I going to do for you? But then Elisha hears about it. Elisha hears that this guy has come. You know the medicine man? He hears and he tells him, he says, send him to see me. And we all know the rest of the story, right? He goes there to see Elisha, and Elisha says, go dip yourself in the river 7 times, and Naaman gets mad about it. Wouldn't y'all get mad about it? You ever gone to the doctor and the doctor had told you to do something that was really stupid? Surely you have. Surely you went to the doctor and the doctor asked you to do something that was fairly simple, but you wanted something else. Have you ever been to the doctor and they just told you to go get some over-the-counter medicine? Why'd I come to the doctor then? I could have done that from home. I know there's some doctors in here. I'm not trying to offend you. But we go to the doctor and he says, well, just take some Robitussin. That's like the cure-all for everything, Robitussin. Well, I could have gone to the pharmacy and got that without wasting my time. And you know what usually happens when I know what the doctor's going to say? I don't do it. Because surely it can't be that simple, right? Naaman, he tells him to go wash yourself in the Jordan River. Naaman looks at the Jordan River. He says, look, I got rivers back in my country that are a lot cleaner than this. I could have done this from home. We could have Skyped in this visit. I didn't even have to show up. And here's the neat part. It's his servant who tells him, if he would have told you to do something complicated, would you have done it? Well, why don't you just take the over-the-counter meds then? So Naaman dips himself 7 times, and all of a sudden, he's clean. I want you to notice 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 15, if your Bible's still open. Naaman returns to Elisha. And he came to him and he stood before him and he said, behold, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. And so now accept a present from your servant. You look at that and it kind of sounds pretty simple. But I want to show you what I think the girl told him. Back in chapter 5, verse 11 and 12. Naaman says, I thought that Elisha would call on the name of the Lord his God. Here's my question. Some of y'all in your Bibles have that capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. That's the Lord's personal name, Jehovah, Yahweh. Here's my question. How did he know what God's name was? I thought he was going to call on Jehovah or something. Well, how do you know that his name was Jehovah? Who told him that? The little girl. Can't say Elisha told him. Look, when he got to Elisha opened the door. He said, go dump 7 times and then shut the door. He didn't tell. That's why he got mad. He didn't meet with the doctor. So the girl must have told him that if you go to my country and you see this medicine man, it's Jehovah, it's Yahweh. This is the God who's going to heal you. And then after, chapter 5, verse 15, look what he says again. He says, now I know there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Did the little girl tell him there is only one God? Did the little girl tell him that there is this God who lives in Israel? If she did, now Naaman knows it's true. I am amazed that a little girl has this much power, that a little girl can give him this little bit of information and he'll cross the earth to see what can happen. So here's my question for all of you. If this little girl can have this kind of power, how much power can you have? If this little girl can convince the man who actually enslaved her to go back to her country to get healed, what do you think you could do with those people who have tried to hurt you in your life? Here's my main question. Who are you in the story? Are you the main character? Are you always the main character? Are you always the one the story's about? Or is it possible that all of us could start playing those little bitty minor roles? The roles of the servant girl. Is it possible? And if we did, how much more of a difference could we make in the lives of others? This time last year, so July 2018, a friend of mine was charged with a very serious crime. Probably the most serious crime you can be charged with. In fact, because he was on the scene of the crime, the police have decided that he must be the only one who could have committed this crime. And so this time last year, they put out a warrant for his arrest. Put out a bolo. He was considered armed and dangerous. And when this warrant went out, he was with another friend. And these other friends called this friend and they said, hey, if he's in your car, police have a warrant. And the police would like to talk to him. So my friend got on the phone with the police. And the police said, you are considered armed and dangerous. If we see you, we will shoot you. And he said, what do I do? And my other friend said, I don't know, but you got to get out of my car. And so my friend got out next to a suburban neighborhood. And he's got nowhere to go. And he just knows that if police pull up, he's dead. Now, that's just what he thought. Would that have happened? I don't know. I have full trust in the police, but he's on the run. He goes into this neighborhood, and he knocks on the door to ask for help. Not to hide him. He just needs some time to think because the police know where he is. And so he knocks on the door of this house, and the guy that he knocks on the guy's house, the door of the man, is a preacher for the Church of Christ. It ain't me. It is a preacher for a small Church of Christ. And my friend proceeds to tell him that he has a warrant for his arrest. He's considered armed and dangerous. This is the crime they say I did. And I would like to turn myself in, but I'm afraid to start walking in that direction. So the man invites him into his home and sits down with him and talks to him. And the man calls the police and tells him, I've got him here. You come get him. And then he makes a sandwich for my friend. Makes him a sandwich too. And they sit down and they have lunch. And then he prays for my friend. And when the police show up, this Church of Christ preacher who got trained at Freed Hardeman, you know, he's tried and true Church of Christ preacher. I mean, you know, he just went to Freed and lived the conservative path. Police show up, and this preacher goes outside, and he tells the police he's going to come outside. He's going to come out here with his hands up. He's unarmed. He's going to go to the ground. He's going to let you arrest him. But you're not going to shoot him. He's unarmed. And when my friend came out of the house, that preacher stood there in between those guns and my friend. just to be sure. Here's my question. What makes that preacher such a good man? Is it that he's a preacher? Is it that he went to Freed? Is it that he knows his Bible? Or is it that he's willing to play a minor role in the story of another man who's considered to be the enemy of so many? When Jesus comes back, what do y'all think he's really interested in? I mean, do we think Jesus is interested in what school you went to? Do you think Jesus is interested in how well you did church? Do you think Jesus is interested in how well we played our part? Or do you think he was interested in how well we all got to be the main character? I always want to be the main character in the story. I want to be the main guy. I think Jesus is more interested in whether or not we were willing to play the minor role. God is interested in whether or not we can understand that the story has never, ever, ever been about you. The story is always about God. It's God's story. It's your enemy's story. It's your friend's story and your role in it. This morning, I'd like to ask you what role you play. I'd like to ask you what role you're willing to play. And I would like to ask you how far you're willing to go to tell your enemies about the God that can heal them. What are you willing to do, and what are you willing to stand in between? Let us ask as we stand and sing.